Allergy season always has a way of sneaking up on you. One minute you're listening to your favorite podcast, the next it's nonstop sneezing and a runny nose. That's why it's essential to keep Kleenex Ultra Soft tissues on hand. They're silky soft for up to 100% irritation-free skin and allergist approved. So when allergies hit, and they will, be ready with Kleenex Ultra Soft tissues. For whatever happens next, grab Kleenex.
Saving money on your next project with help from Menards. Be prepared for flooding and keep your basement dry with Barracuda Pumps. Barracuda makes high-quality pumps that offer dependable performance for when you need it most. Save big money on all Barracuda Pumps now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
By 2003, the highest paid act in Vegas was selling out nightly shows, performing a spectacle of magic, lions, tigers, jaguars, and even an elephant. But one October evening, the act veered off script, and one of the stars paid a heavy price. This week's episode is Siegfried and Roy, Tigers, Tragedy, and the Truth, Part 3.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you.
Well, TW on this one, and that's tiger warning.
Yeah.
For what's about to happen.
There's a tiger warning.
Ins and outs.
If you don't like descriptions of animal attacks, then this one's not for you.
Or medical follow-ups to animal attacks, which is pretty much the extent of this episode. We got like moment by moment of what happened that night, which I've always wondered as a kid, you kind of hear, this is such a milestone in pop culture and you've seen it made fun of and all this stuff. And to like get down into the granularities of it gives a whole different perspective.
Dude, I honestly did not know it was as bad as it was. Like,
me neither.
Remember at the time, because maybe people were kind of playing it off in
like a
humorous
bit.
Way, which they shouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always shocked when I think I know a lot of like a major pop story, and then when we research it and it's like, I didn't know anything about this.
No, anytime we can dive behind the headlines, I like it. And we're also going to talk a little bit about his recovery as well. And I will say there are a lot of differences between Siegfried and Roy and myself and you, but also just like there are a lot of similarities. And like the idea that like something happens to your partner while on stage, I just felt this like gut wrench feeling. And like, you know, like the relationship that they have where they're like, we could speak on stage to each other from, you know, the other one doesn't even have to say anything. We can just make eye contact. I'm like, I know how valuable that is. And to
McGruff
see the person
is gonna go after my neck the next tour.
Like McGruff sunk the boat. He went crazy. No, he I don't know. McGruff might have to stay. I don't know if they're gonna let him on the ship, but
Man, we're gonna have to get a laundry bag to smuggle him in.
Sneak him in a laundry bag, certainly. So from that perspective, as a fellow performer, I certainly felt it. And you know, that's one of my favorite things is performing with you live. So
same with me. I had the same thought, and also that they weren't just performing partners. You know, they had a
emotional
relationship. They were like lovers and partners for decades. So to see like your everything get attacked by the second everything that y'all have, it's like everything in your life literally came to a halt in just a matter of seconds.
One of those, like, the world, there's a before and after, certainly. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, before we get into that, we got a lot of stuff exciting things on the agenda here. Not only are we about to go on a paranormal investigation, which we'll tell you about, and we're going to go on our crime wave at sea, but you can enjoy right now, instantaneously, there are two of you listening to this, a live show of Sinisterhood in your very own home. Our Full Moon Energy Tour, final show under the Hunter's Full Moon, is on Patreon.
Nobody gets attacked by anything. Nothing. Except laughter.
And McGruff a little bit.
Yeah, he's and certainly there. McGruff's always a little horn dog. So.
It's a little dicey what McGruff is up to. For the spooky, spooky price of $13 on the website, if you try to buy it on the app, it will try to charge you more. You can watch it,
Apple.
Damn it, Apple. But you can watch it anytime you want. Tonight can be a full moon energy night, regardless of the moon cycle.
It was a great show, and it's fun to relive it. And we're not going on tour this summer. So it's, you know, if you need, like, if you have a hankering for a live show, this will tide you over. Or I guess we technically do have one live show.
One live show, baby, and that's November 3rd through the 7th on the high seas.
And now, it is in the Atlantic Ocean, so there is that.
Meet us in Fort Lauderdale and go with us aboard Crime Wave at Sea 2025, the ultimate true crime festival at sea, featuring us, Henry and Ed from Last Podcast Side Stories, Dan and Linz from Scared to Death. We got the folks from True Crime Campfire. We cannot wait. It's going to be a hoot.
It's going to be fun. We got to do a fun thing with Henry and Ed yesterday. And
you will hear it tomorrow.
They are so funny. And they kept going, "These are nice women. Don't say that." And I was like, "We're really not that nice."
Yeah. I was like, "Oh, maybe." Ed goes, "They listen to this show," which we do. It's like, we know. We know the Last Podcast Boys.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but they were great. They're super nice and fun, too.
Just good people, good boys, good folks. So we can't wait to get out on the high seas with them. And Ed's a Florida man, and he was pointed out that Fort Lauderdale, where we're leaving from, is one of the points of the Bermuda Triangle. Yeah. So meet us there and let us descend.
I didn't know that. I lived there for 2 years. I said, that must be why my will to live was sucked away from me.
Yeah, that's what the energy suck was going on there. So go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister and join us aboard. But as you hear this, we've recently did a live paranormal investigation. We have some clips you might be able to check out on TikTok and YouTube coming soon. So keep your eyes peeled for the results of our paranormal investigation at the Wilson Castle in an upcoming episode. We'll talk all about it.
We haven't done it as of recording this.
Yes.
But I'm going to say, oh my God, could you believe
it
when we captured that full body apparition on camera when we were live streaming on TikTok? That was insane.
Whenever I walked through that door and ectoplasm shot all over my face, it was crazy. I can't believe it.
When we heard very distinctly, "Christy and Heather, come to the light." And we were like, what? We got all this on film. It's great. So go check it out.
All this and more. Assuming, perhaps, that that's what happened. We can't wait. We can't wait for that episode. But in the meantime, we've got this episode and one more. We're closing out Siegfried and Roy next week with part four. So this one, we're just dedicated it all to the incident. Because it's like, we can't just like, you know, it's like, you can't just roll, like, the tiger got him. Anyways, yada, yada, yada. It's like, let's get into the granular. So like we said, TW for tiger warning.
Yes, it's a standalone for sure.
Certainly.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. On October 2nd, 2003, Roy celebrated his 59th birthday in style. Hundreds of friends gathered inside the Mirage Theater for a lavish party. Roy danced through a sea of well-wishers and kept going all evening. At midnight, he made his birthday wish and blew out the candles on his cake, unaware that within 24 hours, his entire world would be torn apart. On the evening of October 3rd, 2003, Roy gave another sold-out performance along Siegfried at the Mirage. The show began as usual at 7:30 p.m. The audience was packed with visitors like Andrew Cushman, out for a guy's night with friends. He told NBC News that the spectacular show was basically
organized chaos.
About 45 minutes into the performance, during a brief scene change, Roy walked out alone to introduce a 7-year-old, 400-pound white tiger named Manticore. Cushman recalled later,
"It was just Roy and the tiger. He said, 'I'd like you to meet my friend. This is his first show, so he's a little nervous.'"
This was a line Roy had used before, a bit of drama to boost the tension before the tiger would nuzzle him affectionately and receive a treat.
Well, I used to use a line like this when I was a Sea Dog tour guide. I'd be like, "Sorry, guys, it's my first day." And it worked really well.
It worked really well. But if you had fallen overboard and they had to, like, throw a life preserver to you, then you would have been like, Oh, that joke didn't land this time.
No, and neither did I. I didn't land right. But yeah, I mean, he had this big party and you must feel like you're untouchable and on top of the world that like,
yeah,
it's your domain. That theater is not just where you go to work. It's like, we had my party here last night. I'm in charge, so much so that I can walk out alone on stage with a 400-pound white tiger.
The magnitude of these cats really can't be underestimated. Like, they're ferocious looking, and maybe some are sweet, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, they're still a 400-pound tiger.
Yes. And I believe he was extra attached to Manticore because when born, Manticore's mother rejected him and Roy bottle fed Manticore for several weeks, months of his life, whatever. So you kind of get this false sense of like the tiger considers me its parent because and also there's plenty of footage of these white tigers running up the stairs in the jungle palace to Roy's bed to, quote, jump on the bed and meditate with him every morning. So he was, I mean, this man was like very comfortable with a beast that could do what we're about to see.
Yeah. I don't even want my dog jumping on the bed. A 400-pound tiger?
Yeah.
Like, they don't
want
to, I mean, just by default, wouldn't they rip everything up?
I guess they retract their claws and are just cuddly. Mm-hmm. Like all the footage of him, he's like nuzzling their heads. And I'm sure it's stuff that he conditions them from when they're younger, you know, and starts nuzzling them earlier. And so then they kind of become like big lap cats, essentially, like 400-pound lap cats for sure. But yeah, everybody's like, oh, ha 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 ha. I don't know if people like believed that it was his first night, but it's a very good line. And it's a good line to get people like, oh, maybe it is. Masters of Illusion. That's Barmonte.
As Roy stood alone on stage with the massive cat, he instructed Manticore to lie down. When the tiger did not comply, Roy tapped him on the nose with a microphone. In response, Manticore latched onto Roy's arm, causing him to stumble. The tiger then lunged at Roy's neck, biting deeply and dragging him off stage. Audience member Paul Pravati was there on his honeymoon with his wife. He told NBC,
"There were no signs of struggle. Roy did not flail about or scream. It was eerily quiet." Happy honeymoon.
Yeah, this is one of those things where you don't know if it's part of the show, so nobody really knows how to react. But I think deep down, you're like, something doesn't seem right here. This doesn't seem like it was queued up for everyone to applaud or gasp or laugh. This seemed unplanned.
Certainly. And I'm sure it's something like, oh, do you know the part of the show of Siegfried and Roy where the tiger drags him off stage in its mouth? It's so crazy. Like, it's one of the wildest parts. Like, that would be a known, I won't say gag, but like known illusion on the show. And there's something to him being out there with the tiger alone that sort of points to, this was supposed to be a time filler moment of just like introducing a cat while they prep an illusion backstage. So then in your gut, like if you've ever performed, it's like, that wouldn't be how that ended. Like,
yeah,
at all.
The audience was unsure whether the incident was part of the act, but based on the crew's response, they all soon realized that it was not. Horrified attendees like Diane Waitman later told Desert News that not everyone in attendance was confused, explaining,
"I knew he was in trouble right away. I was horrified."
Fellow audience member Andy Cushman said Roy
looked like a rag doll
as the enormous tiger dragged him off the stage. Siegfried appeared on the empty stage, visibly shaken in front of the 1,500 people in attendance, and announced,
"I'm sorry, we're going to have to cancel the show. I'm sorry."
Bewildered in the audience, Cushman later told NBC that he thought,
"Either the curtain's going up and this is the greatest thing I've ever seen, or Roy's really hurt."
It could still at this point be part of it. I, you know, if you've seen the show before, I'm sure you know, oh, this isn't. And some people immediately knew, like, depending on where your seat was and the angle you probably got.
Probably saw the blood start.
Yes, this was not planned at all.
No, and especially, like, you're in an environment where illusions, tricks, changes, like they play with your perception. So it becomes this like Chicken Little situation where they're mm-hmm. always tricking you, and that's what you want and that's what you paid for. So you're like, oh, this is a good one. It's like Scream 2, mm-hmm. like where they're like, oh, it's part of it. And you're like, it's not part of it.
Nightmare scenario.
That movie really fucked me up because every time I reference somebody being attacked in a performance standpoint that no one's paying attention, I'm like, it's just like Scream 2.
I do too. Before you even said Scream 2, I pictured that scene in yes. my head because it is such a
terrifying,
like, or you're at a haunted house and mm-hmm. someone has an actual chainsaw and is going nuts. And then you're like, no, this mm-hmm. isn't supposed to be.
What's happening?
It's heartbreaking to think of Siegfried just watching from backstage and seeing this unfold because Manticore dragged him right off and started taking him right into his cage.
Yeah, he walked off with him. And you also probably, Siegfried feels a responsibility of like, there are people in the audience. Like, I yeah. have to go say something. And the show can't go on. We're not starting yeah. again.
And yeah. if you know anything about how dedicated they are, for them to cancel it, which is, I don't know, but perhaps the first time ever. That they had done that.
Mm-hmm.
That really was telling of how serious it really was.
Yeah, like with that, the employees brought up the time that Siegfried like stuck his arm behind his back because mm-hmm. one of the cats bit him. And it's like, we've had bites before and we just keep going. And it's like, to have Roy lied flat and not, and canceling the show mid-show, I'm sure the crew was like, oh shit.
Mm-hmm. Chaos erupted backstage. Curtis Rowe, one of the handlers, grabbed the tiger's tail. Other stagehands intervene by spraying Manticore with the fire extinguisher, causing the tiger to release Roy. As he was losing consciousness, Roy said to the crew,
"Leave Manticore alone. Bring him back to his brother and sister. Let him be happy."
After the tiger dropped Roy, stagehands moved in quickly. Siegfried rushed over to his partner. Roe later told ABC News,
"We didn't really know what to do other than just put pressure on those wounds, you know. He had seconds to live. All we could do is wait for paramedics." I think the fire extinguisher person was a genius.
It's also wild and speaks very much of how Roy really did love these animals. They were his babies.
Mm-hmm.
He is dying. He's bleeding mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. And he, like, barely able to talk, he's like, don't hurt Manticore.
Because yeah.
I'm sure that he knows, like, if I die, they could put him down or something. Mm-hmm. But he also understood, I honestly think he doesn't think he meant to do it. Or yeah. he knew that maybe it happened, but it was an accident.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, though, he just didn't blame him. Like, he's a tiger at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's a kindness, not like, shoot this thing, do anything to get yeah. it off of me. His number one thing was be nice to Manticore. Mm-hmm. And the crew member that aimed the fire extinguisher said, it was loud, it was cold, and it was startling, and it wasn't going to hurt the animal. Like, we just yeah. needed to get its attention, to get it away. And whoever, I mean, Curtis Rowe, goddamn, grab a tiger by the tail. But I mean, in the moment, you're just like, whatever.
Yeah.
We got to do something. So, and it's not like Manticore drug him back and then continued chomping on him. It's like he drug him back and was holding him. And that's when they're like, what do we do now? And like, that's not the policies.
Yeah. Yeah. What's wild is, did they not have a trank situation backstage just in case?
I'm sure they did, but I think in the instantaneous second, you're just like, right now, what do we do right now? And especially since I don't know that the tiger, again, wasn't shaking anybody. You know, it was like he had him and you yank it by the tail. I think it was just like bam, bam, bam. They're just like, this is nearby. But you're right. From like,
you got to have that on you. The train gun on you, like, at all times.
Yeah, like a, you know, seriously, like on a belt just mm-hmm. in case. Like, especially because it was seconds before. Within 2 feet of somebody in the audience, when you look at the actual, we'll include in our images on Instagram, and we'll see if Paris can put it in the YouTube video. There are kind of reenactments from NBC that are like CG, kind of showing exactly where Roy was. And there is somebody in this world who was from me to this camera, 2 feet from this happening mm-hmm. in front of them. Like, there were seats that close, and it happened that close to the lip of the stage that, like, I won't say thankfully it bit Roy, but truly, like, thankfully it bit Roy and it didn't get, you know, a kid in the audience, yeah, of the people on their honeymoon or something, because it was that close.
That's why you got to have that trank gun on you at all times, because
exactly,
you might not have the seconds to mm-mm, run over there and, you know, spray something at it. You got to do it from afar.
For real.
It sounds like we said, it was just chaos.
Mass chaos.
They're personal assistant that was very close with them just said it was pandemonium backstage,
mm-hmm,
which I get, everyone's shocked. At the same time, when you're working in a show where you're handling big cats daily,
yeah,
it seems as if a plan should be in place. So if something ever does happen, we know exactly what to do.
Yeah, exactly. This is what policies are for and what, mm-hmm, training and stuff is for. And it's like, instead, they're just like, grab
pull
it.
Pull its tail. Get grab the it. Fire extinguisher. Yeah. It was mayhem. Stagehands continued plugging Roy's neck with their hands. Even as he began to lose consciousness, Roy was trying to get up. Roe told NBC.
The whole time we were doing this, he was saying, I got to get up. I got to get to my dressing room.
At 8:19 p.m., the 911 call went out from an employee at the Mirage.
We need paramedics at the Siegfried and Roy Theater. Roy Horn has been bit by a tiger.
Rescue 12 was dispatched at 8:20 for a deadly animal bite.
Dude, you know those paramedics were like, today's the day. We knew this day would come.
Yeah, they've got a plan. They don't know, sure, like, when the call comes in from the Mirage, because at some point it will.
The tiger's going to get somebody.
Yeah, it sounds like he was... yeah, going into shock at this, mm-hmm, like not realizing how bad this really was.
No, that's not, I got to get to my dressing room. To me, sounded like a person losing consciousness and just, mm-hmm, thinking like, oh, the show must be over. I've got to go backstage. You know, like whenever somebody's like passing out and it's just like, oh yeah, I got to go to work right now. And it's like, baby, you ain't going to work.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
By 8:24, paramedics were on scene dressing the wounds. By 8:31, they were en route to the hospital, and Roy was going into shock. One of the paramedics told NBC,
Roy was going downhill and going down fast.
Over the radio, they reported,
Roy was slashed by his own tiger across his neck. He is unable to maintain his airway. He is also not able to speak. We are unable to get blood pressure at this time. Heart rate of 142. It's high.
And that's why I didn't realize how serious it was that, like, yeah, it gets even more serious, but I feel like, and maybe I'm just misremembering, but I feel like the media at the time didn't really tell everyone how deadly it actually was.
I think it's similar to when we covered Lorena Bobbitt of all things, but where they downplayed the trauma of what had happened to her so that Jay Leno can make jokes about what she did to him.
Yeah.
And it's like not funny if it's, mm-hmm, like, well, she was horrifically abused. It's like not funny if it's like this man, like the paramedics were essentially like, we're transporting what's probably a dead person, mm-hmm, but like, we'll try. Technically, he's still alive, so we'll try. But heart rate, I'm no doctor, but my resting heart rate's like in the 60s. Like, mm, if you're just laying still, having your heart rate be up at 142 and they can't get BP, and also they could not, his airway, like, he's got to breathe.
Yeah.
But Godspeed to the paramedics for going from 8:20 to like getting there at 8:24 to being he's in the ambulance and they're speeding away by 8:31. That's like, LV medics was doing as best they could.
Mm-hmm. Time was slipping away as the ambulance was delayed by a passing train and had to reroute. At 8:39, they pulled into the trauma center at Las Vegas's Universal Medical Center and ran him inside. The paramedic told NBC,
in my mind, Roy has taken his last couple of breaths.
One of the trauma doctors agreed, saying,
he is dying with each tick of the clock.
At 8:42 p.m., Roy Horn died on the table. Dr. Jay Coates was on duty and explained to NBC,
there's no technicality to it. He was dead on our table in the trauma bay.
Doctors had just 5 minutes to revive him before brain damage became irreversible. Somehow, they got his heart beating again.
I cannot imagine being a trauma doctor, an ER doctor. God bless all of y'all.
Yeah, it takes a certain person, and thank you very much, because
thank you.
Y'all are who is saving people's lives like this. He coded. He was dead on the table. And
gone.
I certainly don't remember anyone ever mentioning that back in the day.
No, it was sort of just like, well, it was pretty dicey, but they figured it out. Look at him now. Or like, ah, you know, that the bite kind of did something to him, and we will go through what it did to him. But when you get down like granular, in like he fucking died mm-hmm. on the table that day. And especially if you're, well, let's just start shocking the heart, not to mention his neck is bleeding out as badly as it was.
Yeah.
Man.
Doctors treated Roy's many significant injuries, including a severed spine, crushed windpipe, and massive loss of blood. He underwent emergency surgery. While Roy was under the knife, doctors found 4 wounds, 2 punctures at the back of his head below the hairline, and 2 massive lacerations at the front of his neck. Manticore's teeth had punctured the vertebral artery, which supplies blood to the brain. Rory's carotid artery and trachea were crushed by the buildup of internal bleeding. Doctors stabilized him in the OR, but the damage was devastating.
And the CG description of it is like 2 of the teeth in the front and 2 in the back. And that crushing motion crushed the spine, and the idea that your vertebral artery or your vertebral artery is like bleeding into you so badly that it now is, you can't breathe.
You're choking on drowning on your own blood.
Not to mention the artery that you kind of need. Carotid artery is pretty important. That's
one of the most important.
Like getting, it's almost like you're wringing like a wash rag or, you know, just to like get that pressure build up. Like as doctors, it's just like, oh, I didn't know what to expect, but this is fucking terrible. Like it could not be, I mean, it could be worse, honestly, but as bad as it was, at least they were able to assess and move, you know, do something.
Yeah. I imagine like, the 2 puncture wounds and then the back teeth mm-hmm. are what, like, and then the mm-hmm. coming together because mm-hmm. he's going to pick him up, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's just, we all can see how it happens. Yeah, it makes my stomach hurt to think about it.
Truly, and to think of the pressure that a tiger's mouth has too, and the absolute, it's very precious, the human throat. Like, yes. You know, it could be crushed pretty easily.
Very. Yeah, especially your windpipes.
Mm-hmm.
Roy suffered a massive stroke. The right side of his brain was swelling at a fatal rate, threatening the left side as well. Dr. Derek Duke pulled Siegfried aside and explained that they had just minutes to act. Roy needed an emergency craniectomy, where surgeons remove a piece of the skull to relieve pressure. To keep the bone alive for reimplantation later, they placed the piece in Roy's abdomen. Siegfried later said,
"It was the most frightening experience in my life. Frightening because you feel so helpless."
Outside the hospital, strangers gathered for a candlelight vigil with magic legends Penn and Teller among the crowd.
And on the one hand, they fucked around with tigers and found out. On the other hand, again, as like a person who is like in a like marriage with my husband or in a life marriage with you, you know, like to think of like, partners. You know what I'm truly, but like to have them come in and be like, we have to cut Christy's head open or like we have to cut Heather's head open. Is that okay? And you're just like, what do you just save them? Just save them.
You're do like, anything do whatever to save you got to do.
Yeah. And that's what he's like. I just was like watching it all happen. And I was like, whatever it takes, save him.
Like, and it's those moments too, where you're like, 45 minutes ago, we were all like dancing, having fun on stage. And now this is the worst thing that's ever happened to anybody.
And like involved. our life's going to change, if at all. Like, is my life about to have to go on without this person? But I got really like choked up with the crowd footage to see like Penn Jillette with his like candle out there. And I was like, truly, they were a part of this like magician community. And it is a very close knit community. And also just like people in Vegas love them.
Yeah.
They were legends.
Icons. And word travels fast, especially when 1,500 people in the audience just saw that happen and then spill out onto the strip.
Right.
Word's going to get through the grapevine very quickly. Rory later told People magazine he had an out-of-body experience in the OR while flatlining on the table. He recalled,
"I stepped out of my body and looked over the surgeon's shoulder, and I sat while he was cutting me up. And my mom, who died 3 years prior, is sitting in a chair, and in front of her is one of my lions I had before, and my Siberian tiger was laying there, and my brother, who had passed on years and years ago. And I know everything is going to be fine."
We've heard this before of people that have flatlined on the table, that they kind of can see everything going on.
And
which
getting,
is fucking nuts.
It's crazy to watch it happen to you. And not only that, but they often say they see people from their life mm-hmm. helping them out, or people from like the surgeon or the nurse's life, like around helping them out or whatever. But what happened to Roy on the table is very similar medically to the NDEs that get studied in the book that Dr. Bruce Grayson's book, where it is a heart related, where basically like they couldn't get blood pressure and is a heart related where your brain otherwise is fine. And he has this experience. Maybe it was a dream. Maybe it was real and he watched him. But yeah, seeing surgeons cut you up from the other side of the room is wild.
Yeah. The only reassuring thing I take from those stories is that pretty much everyone says they feel at peace and that they feel, you know, it's the people that Siegfried and the friends and family out there that are really suffering.
Yeah, everybody's panicking. But yeah, you're there with your mom and your brother mm-hmm. and your giant lions in the OR. It stands to reason he would have a lion and a Siberian tiger with them in the OR. Yeah. That's very Roy coded.
After surgery, Roy's long road to recovery began. Dr. John McIntyre treated him in the ICU and told NBC,
"He was in bad shape when he first came to the unit.
Roy was on a ventilator, a feeding tube, and had only one eye open. Before the bite, Roy was in excellent shape, on par with a professional athlete, and this fitness helped him in his recovery chances. Doctors kept him in intensive care for 3 weeks to wean him off the ventilator. Once he came off, he stayed off. He was on life support for a month before being transferred for further care in Los Angeles."
It's hard to be on a ventilator. It's hard on your body. And especially the fact that he's also on a feeding tube. This is the clinging to life level.
Like, really I can't even say he got as close to dying because he did die.
Yeah.
And they somehow brought him back. And then it's worst case scenario as far as recovery goes, the severity of what you're going to have to go through and just the time and pain. And I'm glad, you know, you have your life.
Yes.
At some point, though, do you think at what cost, like, would I have been better off? You know, like, I can't continue to do what I love. My life will never be the same.
Yeah.
I think it's different for everyone.
Oh, certainly. And his athleticism is what I think really helped. Mm-hmm. But also, you don't get athleticism just like by sitting around. Like, he was constantly moving. He was like every day, get up, train the tigers, go visit this. He was much like very much a run mm-hmm. kind of a person. So I'm sure in addition to the physical suffering, there is like such an emotional toll of like, but I want to be, I could be, like, just let me get out of it. But mm-hmm. and that we'll see. I think that also might help with recovery because you're so determined of like, I'm not going to fucking lay here. Like, I can't take this, but.
And his body was in such good shape beforehand mm-hmm. that it helped him in more ways than he could have even imagined.
For sure.
Having suffered a stroke, Roy was partially paralyzed on the left side of his body. He was unable to speak and tried expressing himself by writing. At the beginning, his messages were just illegible scrawls. But Dr. Katja von Hurl, who cared for Roy in L.A., told People magazine that one of his first coherent notes was,
"Please take care of Mr. Siegfried."
Just days after the incident, Roy's lifelong performing partner released a statement reflecting the strength of their bond, saying,
"For more than four decades, I have had the great privilege of standing at the side of this remarkable man, and I will continue to do so during this very challenging time."
Angel. I mean, you couldn't have asked for someone better in your life to be there. And like, so from the time he was bit, there were two things he was able to communicate. Don't hurt Manticore. Take care of Mr. Siegfried. So it was all about the animals and the people in his life that he loved. That's who he was worried about.
It's true. It shows what matters. And that's what matters mm-hmm. to you is what's in your heart. And you can read in their book and, you know, just watching them in interviews and stuff. They were a little bit more coy in interviews, I think. But in their book, they like truly talk about like what each of them means to each other. And I don't think it was ever a question that they loved each other, regardless. Like, cause some people were like, well, they were romantic and they weren't, but they were just together and they weren't, whatever. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, they deeply loved each other. Mm-hmm. And like he said, for more than four decades. Like, you met when one of you is 13 and one of you is 17 or something, 18. Like, you have literally grown your entire lives together. That it, things like this show really at the core of it, that it truly was like a partnership built on love. Mm-hmm. And whether we think that their love, like I said, some people think they love their kids and they want them to go tap dance and make them, you know, go, honey, go, like they're stage moms or whatever. And we have to like regulate that. Similarly, he thought that the Tigers wanted to dance and maybe we need to regulate that. But even so, like, it was at least motivated by a care and affection for these things. And
for sure,
you can't fake that, you know, when you can't fake dying on a table.
No. And it wasn't like, please save me. I need to reunite with my Tigers. It was take care of, you know, my partner, however many, many different ways he was the partner. Immediately after the incident, Manticore was quarantined for 10 days by county animal control in accordance with the routine procedures for any animal bite. The tiger was released back to the Siegfried and Roy compound when deemed healthy. At the time, the men owned 24 tigers and 8 lions.
They, what did he say? Take him back to his brothers and sisters.
That is so fucking many. I saw a TikTok yesterday of probably 4 or 5 female lions walking, you know, in the savannah with all their cubs, which there were like 13 of them. There were so many. But I was awestruck that if you were just out in nature where you would encounter this, but these... And because tigers, like most animals, it's a matriarchal society. So the women are out taking care of the tiger cubs and hunting and stuff for them. And I just looked at them and thought, if I even tried to get near that tiger cub, that thing would rip my face off.
To shreds.
To have 24 lions and 8 tigers, or what, I'm sorry, 24 tigers and 8 lions that you live with that run freely around your house. It's not for everyone.
Yeah. No, there's there were some places in the their area where they, and by that I mean the Jungle Palace, and we'll link it in the show notes. There's a, we'll talk a lot more about the Jungle Palace next time, but there are the parts where the tigers were, there was like some like green fencing or whatever. But then specifically there was an area where it was like a dog park, but for tigers, so that Roy could just go and, like you said, run around freely amongst them. And on the one hand, yes, at no point before this, the day of his 59th birthday, was he ever attacked previously. I mean, attacked, right? Like, we had these close calls we've talked about. But I think the problem is that really does instill a false sense of confidence into a person who's like, they're my babies. I run around with them all the time. And then in that moment, too, of like, Manticore won't lie down. Let's, for a moment, backtrack to how we even got here.
True, Manticore, we haven't even really talked about that.
Where it's like, Manticore, lie down. And when it didn't obey your command, you bopped it on the nose. I'm not saying he hit it. I'm not saying it was an injury to an animal. I think a tiger can take a lot more than a bop to the nose. I wouldn't certainly do it.
No.
And the other trainers said that he did that. So you get a little too comfortable that you think you can go boop. Like, I don't boop the goose on the nose because I think she'll bite me. She will, by the way. She's vicious, but
yeah,
like, she's a chihuahua. So
it's giving Timothy Treadwell. Like,
you're like a little too comfy.
You're just too comfortable. And when you cross that line of like, I'm not saying he didn't respect them, because I think he respected them, but I think he was a bit, what's a nicer word than delusional?
No, you're right, though.
But like, that he had a power over them that no one else did, or that he had this connection. So it was like, they would never turn. I bottle fed him. He's my child. It's like, even human kids can turn on you and bite you if they want. But like, this is not a human. At the end of the day, this is a 400-pound huge cat. Like, you don't have the control over it that you think you do.
And I think delusion's not too far off, because if someone is the only person in the world doing what you're doing, which they were at the time, they were the only people with, it wasn't like, you know, at circuses, certainly you have the lion tamer or whatever. And, you know, we feel how we feel negatively, quite frankly, about circuses. But like, Siegfried and Roy were like, but we're not like the circus people. We lavish love on these cats. We are the only people in the world who literally built our house so that our cats can live with us. And we built them a secret garden at the Mirage with on-site veterinarians, with on-site nutritionists. Like, we have the most poshed out cats. They're never going to freak out and turn on us. And it's like, you can't know that second part. You can do all that stuff. And the problem is nobody else has done that. So you can't know the result. And you can't know that they never would attack you or do whatever they did to you, have an incident with you that ends with you dead on a trauma ER table. But like, I think you're right that there is something to the delusion aspect of it, of I am the chosen one, which it does go back to ego and hubris, right? Like, I can control them. And it's, what's your training? Are you a zoologist? Did you work with, when I was a boy, I had a cheetah. And you're like, so just like personal experience.
Yeah.
Cool, self-taught, self-trained. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Much like Timothy Treadwell.
Exactly. And it's like, I get these bears. No one else gets them.
No one else does. And it's like,
they're about to get you.
Yeah, buddy. And because, I mean, if you haven't seen Grizzly Man, go watch that documentary. It's one of the best documentaries I've seen. It's also upsetting if you don't like animal attacks. But it again, he had that hubris of, I know these bears. I come here every season. I live out here with them. We're like family. It's like, no, you're to them just an invader that comes every couple months and, you know, sleeps outside in the tent. But like, they're bears.
Yeah. And like, you can't know that bear is in a good mood when you come and visit it, because you aren't with it 24/7.
You didn't even call it on the phone to let it know you're coming and see how its mood is. Like, they're RSVP. Wild animals.
Yeah, you need to RSVP. That's fucking rude. But true. And it's like, even with that, it's like, you get an even more false sense of security when it's like, I'm with them like 5 hours a day. Like, I train them all day, and I've had him since he was a baby, and I've never had him out of my sight. And it's like, it's still a wild animal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've had, I think one pet of ours, a dog, there was a little spot on his butt that if you got near it, he would turn around and snap at you. He just, he didn't like it. He was a 20-pound little terrier.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I would still be like, guys, don't get near his butt, because you had to warn people, like, he doesn't like that. And if he bit me, it would hurt. You know what I mean? And I could easily take him down. I wasn't ever trying to wrestle Biddy, but you're not going to win against a 400-pound tiger.
No, you're right. It's like that idea of like respecting nature regardless of its size. Of like, I know what the goose can do. I know what Biddy can do. I'm not going. Small dogs don't fucking play.
No, they don't.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
Following the incident, Roy spent months in rehabilitation, including time at Craig Hospital in Inglewood, Colorado, which specializes in spinal cord and traumatic brain injury recovery. The road to recovery would be long. Dr. McIntyre explained to ABC News.
You have to literally go back to like when you were an infant and learn how to walk again and how to talk again and how to swallow. And Roy's drive, I believe, is what got him through this.
Despite the severity of his injuries, Roy made significant progress, regaining some mobility and speech. However, he remained partially paralyzed and required ongoing care. He continued his recovery at the duo's 6-acre Jungle Palace compound, 8 miles northwest of the Strip, with in-home nursing care and physical therapy.
That's so daunting, though, to be like, you can't even lift your head at one point. But it is inch by inch recovery is, so just a lot of work.
I mean, I can't even really understand it, because when we learned these things originally, we can't remember that. But to have all of that taken from you and have to relearn it while you're also recovering from a tiger ripped your throat out. Luckily, they had a ton of money and could afford great care, and he could stay at home and do it there. But no matter what kind of beautiful palace you live in, he wants to be back on stage with those tigers and Siegfried.
You kind of just like, I wish it never happened. I don't, because it also, wrecks the brand for a person who's so cognizant about showing that these tigers are magical, lovely creatures that should be protected, I'm sure you're like, well, now everybody's going to think they're attackers. And I wish this never happened. But he did say that spending time at that hospital in Colorado was a huge game changer, because before that, you know, he was going through a lot of physical therapy and stuff alone. And I think he was kind of like the most injured person where he was. And when he got to Craig Hospital, he said, I was able to interact with other people that had traumatic brain injuries and spinal injuries. And he said, we could relate and share stories. And so there is something to that community aspect, especially if you're a really wealthy person and you're like, I'll just recover at my mansion, that going to a place where you're sort of immersed in this kind of immersed in an environment that is not just focused on, okay, let's just get you back to baseline, but also like the toll that it takes on you as a person of like, I can't write my ABCs and I'm 59 years old.
And like you said, having a community where people can understand what you're going through, because as dutiful and as attentive as Siegfried is, like, he doesn't know what, like, emotionally and mentally Rory is going through. And until you meet someone that, like, also their whole life was changed in a matter of seconds.
No, it makes sense, though, because I think we underestimate the emotional impact on your ability to recover. And so you're right. Having solidarity or having somebody who's just like, I just was, you know, on a jet ski and this thing, you know, like where you're just living your life doing a normal thing. And then the, I would say unthinkable, but, you know, something that could potentially be life altering happens. It helps to have somebody else that gets it. That's not just like, well, I was there and saw it happen to you. And it's like, yeah, but you can still walk. So like, I need to talk to this person who is struggling to regain mobility or whatever themselves. So especially in addition to, you're not just injured, you're injured catastrophically. And like, people on television are making fun of you.
Yeah. And also 1500 people saw it happen and it's was filmed.
Yes.
So there's that too. It's you, and not only are you injured catastrophically, there's your job. I mean, your job is gone. It's not like you can go back to work probably ever, certainly not anytime soon.
Yeah.
And then your partner's job is gone too. I mean, they had this whole theater empire built for them, and in a matter of seconds, it's like, we don't have that show anymore now. You can't do it with just Siegfried. I don't think you would want to anyways.
Yeah, I don't think you would.
Siegfried and Rory maintain that the incident with Manticore was not an attack, but a protective act by the animal. The duo asserted that Rory suffered a stroke on stage, causing him to fall, and that Manticore, sensing something was wrong, attempted to help by dragging him off stage. Rory attributed the fall to a dizzy spell he suffered due to high blood pressure medication. Well, I
it's the spin zone. We're headed to the spin zone.
I think it's the spin zone. And what I struggle with is, do y'all really think that's what happened? Or, well, there's really three things. Do you really think that's what happened? I don't think that they really think that's what happened. Do you know what happened, but you're so worried that these tigers will be taken from you or put down that you now you have spun it, and also to protect your brand? Or I guess there really is the third of, I can't bring myself to think that Manticore really did this to me, so I'm going to believe that he was trying to save me instead.
Or the fourth option, Manticore is a hero and we are discounting that.
We can't really discount perhaps that. But the reason I don't think it's that one is because when tigers or any kind of animal pick up like their young, like by the scruff of their neck and stuff, they don't puncture them. They don't go for the, you know what I mean? Like if he was really trying to like take him off stage because he was injured and he could recognize that, I feel like it would be like dragging by the shirt or, you know,
by the arm or something,
nuzzling him along or like they would pick up a tiger cub or something, not go for like your main artery in your throat.
Yeah. A throat is kind of what you would go after on an animal you were trying to kill or eat. So,
And whatever spooked him, you know, did he not like the bop on the nose? Was it just something in the air that night or, you know, somebody in the crowd? That's the thing. You don't know because they can't tell you, and they're wild animals. So one little thing is different and maybe it triggers them.
Yeah, you like cleared your throat in a way it didn't like or something. You just couldn't know. Yeah, certainly. But you're right. It is, as we are about to go through their statements on it, you, the listener, can decide whether you think if it is A, B, C, or D, what really happened here. Because a lot of different stories.
But
they sure, they came out the gate with theirs pretty strong.
Roy told People magazine in 2004.
I started feeling kind of weak. I fell over. Manticore saw that I was falling down, so he actually took me and brought me to the other exit where everybody could get me and help me. He knew better than I did where to go.
Roy's partner later echoed this sentiment in multiple interviews, describing the event as an accident rather than an attack. Siegfried, sitting beside his partner, told Maria Shriver on NBC,
I saw exactly what happened. Roy tumbled when Manticore right away realized, he realized and I realized, he's in trouble. He needs some help. And we went out and that's what we did.
Shriver clarified, asking,
the tiger saved you?
Roy confirmed,
yes, that's how wonderful they are.
And Siegfried added,
if the tiger wanted to fight, in 2 seconds it would be finished and he wouldn't sit here.
I don't know that the tiger wanted to fight. Mm-hmm. I just think tigers were doing, the tiger did what tigers do, and our bodies aren't made to take those big ass fangs going into your jugular.
That's a good point. I think too, I wonder the difference in fragility of a human throat, neck area to like a baby tiger cub scruff, like maybe if their skin's like thicker or something. But even still, you're right. I think there's something to like, the witnesses who saw it were like, he bopped the cat, he fell, he bopped the cat knocked him over, like bit his arm, knocked him over, and then dragged his throat, versus Roy is like, well, I just fell, and then Manticore got me, and kind of leaving that step out, which you're right, that becomes the question of, are you purposefully obfuscating what happened, or are you like sick to your stomach and cannot come to terms with the fact that this happened, so you just lie to each other and be like, I saw it too, babe, I saw what happened, it wasn't that, and like, you're really like, no, I swear I saw this, and you just lie to yourself because you don't want to know the truth. You can't bear the truth.
I did wonder that if they ever had a conversation, just the two of them alone at night, where it was like, we know that, like that, like we know, right? We don't even have to say it because we can communicate with each other on stage. But I think you're right that Rory couldn't admit it. I really think he lied to himself to protect everything that mattered to him. And my speculation, and this is just my own opinion, is Siegfried saw what happened and he knew that that's not, Roy's account was not what happened.
Yeah.
But did they have a conversation to, this is the story and we're sticking to it? Or he just knew that, like, I'm not going to go against him because I also have all these concerns. Had they talked prior, if this ever happens, we just will say that it was not the animal's fault.
Yeah, that's a great point. I will say, I don't know 100% what goes on backstage, but it seemed suspicious to me that Siegfried would say, I saw exactly what happened. Because the whole thing was that Roy is out on stage alone with Manticore for purposes of backstage prepping the next illusion and getting stuff going. So my thing's like, your backstage job is to just like peek through the curtains and like watch what Roy is doing. Like, I doubt that. So again, that's what made me think, like, if your partner, if Roy is laying there and is like, I can't believe this happened. My baby attacked me. Oh my God. Do you, as Siegfried, say, or not even attack me, but Roy's like, oh my gosh, I've suffered these injuries. Oh, I know what happened. It was because I was already having a stroke. I didn't have a stroke on the table like the doctors all said. In fact, I was already having the stroke before he bit me. Therefore, him biting me was great, which they said in other interviews, because it the bleeding out, me bleeding out and nearly dying, actually dying, relieved the pressure on my brain, which again, not relieved the blood pressure of me having the stroke, which again, not true because they had to do the craniectomy. So this kind of, their story didn't quite fit with what happened medically speaking. And like, this medical info is from the special that aired within like a year of it happening, like right around a year of it happening. So there was some info like within the intervening years, but maybe like people didn't want to ask, but you have your partner going, this thing happened and Manticore did it to save me. And despite that, Siegfried didn't see it and Siegfried knew it wasn't true, but Siegfried knows if he doesn't agree that Roy might not recover, that you'd be like, you're right. That's exactly what happened. I saw it. I'll tell Maria Shriver to a face, which let's not discount that Maria Shriver married to Arnold Schwarzenegger, friends with Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's why I forgot. They were friends with the Schwarzenegger. Yeah,
the Governator.
The Governator. It's a weird thing. My brain's gone all over. Like, I wonder what the stagehands saw. Were they talked to afterwards, or was it kind of just understood that from the beginning, this is what the story was, and we're not going to be the ones to say anything different because they. At the time, they were their employers. All those people then don't have a job either.
Right. But,
you know, you don't want to go against the most powerful people in Vegas.
Yeah. And especially, too, you almost – because by the time Roy was sitting up telling Maria Shriver this, he is – slightly recovered from his stroke, still suffers some like mobility issues. So is in like a rolling, you know, an electric wheelchair, using a wheelchair with a paralysis on his left side. So part of his face isn't. So he looks much different than the like very animated. And so if you do come out and go, that guy's a liar, then that's also sort of like socially becomes like a weird thing. It's a pressure to stay silent of like, the guy's been through enough. Like I wasn't physically on stage, so I can't really argue. All I know is what I saw from backstage, but it's a hard thing because you want the truth to be out there, but it's like, well, who will that help and will it kill this dude?
Yeah. The U.S. Department of Agriculture launched a formal investigation in an effort to determine what set the tiger off and whether the magical pair was in compliance with the Federal Animal Welfare Act. The USDA's investigation reviewed the Mirage Hotel Casino's internal investigation, the files from Las Vegas police, and witness statements. The company that produced the Siegfried and Roy show refused to provide the footage to federal investigators, citing concerns over Roy's privacy and potential sensationalism by the media. When the federal agency pressured the Mirage for the footage, the senators from Nevada threatened to intervene. The USDA dropped its quest for the tape.
Yikes.
Here's where things get real sticky. Again, like, you don't want to go up against the biggest people in Vegas. The senators are like, drop it.
Leave him. Leave him alone.
We're not doing it. They bring in billions of dollars. We're not doing it. Also, if something happened and you didn't want anyone to ever be able to see it again and break it down of how things went wrong, you would say, don't ever release that tape.
Yeah, my thing is, like, I'm not blaming Steve Wynn directly, but given that it happened at a bajillionaire developer, very powerful, very close with Siegfried and Roy, as we will let you all know, they signed a lifetime contract with Steve Wynn and the Mirage. There's a lot of cachet behind them. Mm-hmm. And when the USDA investigators are doing their poking around that they want to do, if they don't want it out, I have a feeling it's not quite still like the 70s Las Vegas mafiosa like running it, but it's similar in that it's like a very, very wealthy person who I'm assuming donates to campaigns, including Senate campaigns, and who has fundraisers and who lets politicians host fundraisers at their hotel casinos and has entertainers for those fundraisers. That certainly a phone call is made and the senator makes a phone call. And then you as an underling at the USDA are like, well, I guess the one thing that would have helped me determine my job, which is what caused this, I'm not going to get that one thing.
Yeah. Is it legal?
I mean, what's legal, right? Like, who, it's sort of becomes apparent the tenuous regime that we all live under, that like this is how things work. The USDA will investigate, they'll get all the materials and they'll get out. Well, that's how it works on paper. But in practice, you get a phone call from
money.
Yeah.
Money.
It's like, he who has the most chips makes the rules, I guess, in Vegas. Cause like, that's what happened, that everybody seemed to be okay with it. And then again, you also have the optics of, this is a guy that's still struggling. He can't barely talk. He can't barely walk. And it's like, and you want a video of what happened to him? You're just looking to sensationalize it. And would it have leaked? 1,000%.
It would have leaked. It'd be all over the internet.
100%. 100%.
Would people have a better understanding of what happened and how to prevent it in the future? Also, yes.
Yeah. And I think, too, if you are in charge of a hotel casino where an incident like this happened, you might be concerned of perhaps liability issues. Oh, yes. So if it's found and you see insert whatever amount of violations here on that tape, in addition to the bite, you're like, we're going to get fucking slapped with a huge fine. Not that the show was ever going to go back on, but there's also a market interest on the behalf of the Mirage Hotel Casino to say, like, we're not cooperating either. Nah, get a court order. And like the USDA didn't. So, I mean, when you say is it legal, could they have potentially pushed it? I mean, maybe, but if no,
at what cost to them?
Also, the USDA, I mean, they dropped it. So maybe they don't really care. Like,
Or they were told, or they were a little envelope was shoved across the table to help them not care a little bit more.
They're like, sir, this just says cool it on it. And they're like, yeah, cool
These
it.
Are just passes to the secret garden. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's complimentary. It's like,
yeah. Why don't you go visit Manticore? And it's like, what? This is a threat. No, Manticore's sweet. And you're like,
Oh, man. Nowadays, although probably in a show like that, you probably can't have your phone out. But maybe nowadays, wouldn't have mattered if the Mirage didn't want to cooperate. Somebody there is going to have footage of it.
Oh, certainly. And I bet, like, even if it's like it starts and then you start filming and they're, you know, you maybe don't get the bite, but you get the drag away or whatever. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to hide it like you could now. But 2003 was a different time. We didn't have cameras in our pockets.
We did not.
Sinister Hood will be right back.
The investigation explored various theories, including the tiger being hungry, provoked by someone in the audience, or affected by external stimuli like scents or sounds. All these theories were ruled out due to lack of evidence. For their part of the investigation, Las Vegas police noted,
detectives were unable to determine what caused Manticore to deviate.
The agency's final 233-page report was issued on September 28, 2004, just under a year after the attack. That's a lot of pages.
Yeah.
And you might be able to determine what caused them to deviate if they would release the footage.
It's almost as if a key piece of evidence was missing. So then you go, the cause was undetermined. And you're like, oh, so that's it now? They're like, we don't know. Shit. Yeah. Happens. And you're like, did you just write shit happens on 233 pages? And like, yeah.
Just over and over.
And then on the back of it, it says, cool it. Yeah. Stop asking.
Also, you've already given me passes to the secret garden. I don't want any more. They're like, your family. It's a fun day trip.
We got you a commemorative photo frame. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even have a picture exactly. Because you won't, because we're not releasing the footage.
Yeah. If the person that got attacked also doesn't want to release. Now, if the tiger jumped in the audience and attacked an audience member, that family, I would definitely be like, nah, we're not doing that. Unless the Steve Wynn writes you a big old bajillion dollar check. But even then,
you'd want
something. You'd want some sort of justice. And I feel like you then should have the right to have the tape.
That's a really good point, and you're right. I think if there was a third-party litigant involved of, like, an injured family member or whatever, you would have attorneys that were adverse to the win and, in fact, like, working in concert with the regulators to say, like, the regulators need the footage and we need the footage and we want to assert our rights and sue. But you're right. The victim is like, it's cool, man. We don't need to see it. Mm-hmm. It's fine. Just keep it in the vault.
The USDA determined no cause, but found that the show failed to protect the audience adequately, noting the absence of a barrier separating the exotic animals from the crowd. USDA official Robert M. Gibbons remarked,
"Big cats could have easily jumped off the stage and into the audience."
The USDA issued a letter of noncompliance to SNR Productions, though the warning did not carry any penalties. By then, the show was no longer in operation. USDA officials acknowledged they had inspected the show multiple times before the incident on 4 routine inspections from December of 2002 to October of 2003, yet had not ordered a barrier earlier.
Okay, Robert M. Gibbons, you're right, certainly, sir, but like a little late,
Dude, how do you go see this show or not even, you're you like, know, what, at four times you're like, yeah, man, check, there's check. 10 tigers on stage, 20. Nothing separating them from the audience. All right. And the next time you go back four times, you had four times like, to do something.
Looks good.
Or did they say something and they were like, nah, we're not doing that. It takes away from the show.
No, I mean, because the USDA officials did not at all on any of the routine inspections prior to the incident, had not, including before, like relatively soon before the attack incident, whatever. And at no point were they like, hey, man, we think you need some barriers. It was just like, looks good. I guess they're on chains. They don't ever get out. And they're like, they would never get out. It's impossible. And you're like, all right, sounds good. Like, I don't, again, it was kind of like, never been done anywhere. So like, how do you even inspect that? And you're just like, yeah, as USDA officials, like the Animal Welfare Act is like, I'm here to make sure they're fed. Check. They were like the most pampered cats. So from that perspective, the USDA was like, it looks great. Mm-hmm. So I wonder too, if you're the inspector and you're like, well, when we see like the cats are really like neglected, then the fencing's neglected, then the public's at issue. It's like reverse broken windows. Like the cats were so very well cared for that I wonder if that instilled a false sense of security in USDA inspectors that they're like, oh, these people pamper those fucking things. They're never going to get out. Like they care for them all the time. And it's like, why don't you talk to Sean Stanek about how his body was ripped to shreds by one of these things in the 70s and they're still doing it. And it's only gotten bigger.
The ultimate illusion.
Dude, damn.
Ultimate smoke and mirrors.
Siegfried and Roy, the ultimate illusion. But truly it was like it was.
It was though. And they're very charming people too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they're talking to these people and reassuring them and they're huge celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that carries a lot of weight.
As does statistics. So if you say they perform 44 weeks a year, let's say they did 6 shows a week.
Yeah.
That's times, you know, from the 70s on, even if you just go from the Wynn contract on, that's 10 years worth of shows. And there's zero incidents, to be fair, in the Wynn years, or the Mirage years. Like, I think that the USDA inspectors would probably be like, yeah, there's kind of nothing to see here.
Until there is.
They shouldn't. They
and
shouldn't.
Then it's too late.
I'm like, there's a goddamn elephant on this stage at some point. God forbid somebody pulls some peanuts out of their purse and the thing stampedes.
Some
you
peanut
know?
Butter. Yeah,
a mouse comes on stage. You're donezo. You're donezo. A single mouse upends the whole fucking show.
Oh,
but for real,
no.
It's wild to me that in retrospect, the USDA is like, I think there should be some railings here. You're like, you're like, you think?
You well, think?
They're like, send a letter to the defunct production company that no longer goes on. There's no more shows because the guy's throat got ripped out. So,
and I think there's something like you said of this guy's been through enough. We're not gonna add insult to injury with lawsuits and yada yada yada. Well, I guess since it was him that was attacked, injured, then he can make that call. Like you said, he was probably the best one that could have been attacked because he was the only one, maybe Siegfried, that wasn't going to be like, this show, every tiger here, they're gone, we're done.
Yeah. And I'm suing you and I want, you know, a bajillion dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
What even kind of barrier are we talking that we would put on this stage that would stop a 400-pound tiger from leaping the fuck over it? Where you could still enjoy the show.
That's it. I think you would have to have at least waist high gates and then from waist high up to sky high, like with some sort of cover on it, like fencing, kind of like how they had at their compound where it was like, it's like you see at a zoo or something, or it would have to be such a distance, like a moat around it to where it would be a further distance than the cats could jump to get to the audience. But then you don't have what they literally had, which was audience members like elbow close to the stage.
Yeah,
so
which is what they wanted.
Yeah, it's what they wanted because it's like this immersive illusion. And it's like, you let the big cat get loose when Elizabeth Taylor was in the room. And now suddenly you want, like, I don't know. I think they were, like you said, even if they were asked, I don't think they would have. But there is no indication in my research, and nobody said, we told him 5 times to get a barricade. Mm-mm. No, it was just like, you guys need a barricade. And they're like, it's a little late for that now. The theater is like hosting the Beatles Love, like Cirque du Soleil. Like, there's no more tigers.
We're not doing it anymore. Maybe like a, not glass, because that would be too fragile, but some kind of see-through
a plexiglass
durable thing from like you said, ground to people height, and then mm-hmm. from there up, it's cage or something. Yeah. But, you know, that really separates you from the audience, and it takes away from the experience, which is was a big part of their show. Is it safer? 1,000%.
Yeah.
Part of the fun of the show for people was the thrill and danger of it.
And true. And it's like, no one in the world is doing this but us. And you're like, for liability reasons, because yeah. they can't get insurance. That's the other thing. I'm like, Steve Wynn, how the fuck did you get insurance on this show for so long? Who was insuring this?
When you own the place.
Yeah, you just go like, we'll take the risk.
You do whatever, I guess.
The back of your ticket's like, please understand, you might be shredded by a jungle cat. And you're right? Like, oh, it'll be great, honey. Let's take the kids.
Nowadays, you would have some kind of a disclosure when you bought a ticket to something like that.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they had like the standard, like, you know, when they put it on the back, like limitation of liability on the ticket. But especially nowadays, like you would have to put people's phones in like yonder pouches or something. Mm-hmm. One person with the flash on or like shining a light or something like that, or who knows, like somebody, God forbid, their cell phone ringtone is the sound of a bird or something, or
oh, geez.
Duck yeah. or something, and the cat's like,
or a female tiger.
Yeah. Hang on, I'll take it.
And then all hell breaks loose.
Chaos.
People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, filed a lawsuit in 2006 demanding more information from the USDA, including release of internal footage of the night in question. The group's efforts were unsuccessful. To this day, the Mirage's surveillance video of the incident has never been publicly released.
Well, all you can do is see like a recreation by NBC based on Roy's version.
Right, yeah. I feel like it's a Timothy Treadwell situation where there's one copy of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Werner Herzog was like, nobody can ever see this. Don't ever listen to this.
They sent it to Werner Herzog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just with the bear footage.
He's like an expert on listening to animal attacks now. But is it even still around? Who knows?
Right. Like, who did keep it? I wonder.
Yeah. And I also wonder if somewhere there is a copy of that tape, and maybe one day it will be unearthed.
Yeah, after so many years or whatever, mm-hmm. maybe.
Or people die and somebody's going through a storage closet at the Wynn and are like, oh, what's Whoa. This?
What, mm-hmm. They're like, what is in Steve Wynn's private safe? And it's like, it just says the tape. This yeah. is weird. And then you
and
put it in and
everybody knew what it was.
He's like, this is my friend Manticore. It's his first night. And everyone's like, this is it's happening.
Oh, man. The next period was marked by Roy's arduous recovery, made possible by Siegfried's steadfast support and their enduring bond with the animals they cherished. Manticore stayed in the Mirage's secret garden enclosure, where he lived with other big cats and exotic animals. Visitors could peer in for a $25 admission fee. Roy had begun to walk by March of 2004, 5 months post-attack, and was still working with traumatic spinal recovery specialists to increase his mobility for 6 hours a day, 6 days per week. Though he walked some, Roy moved around mostly in a motorized wheelchair and struggled to stand. Still, his doctors praised his incredible recovery, telling people in 2004 it was basically
a miracle.
5 months later and you're walking
it's
around.
Crazy.
Yeah. And all, yeah. I mean, how exhausting. But he's used to like grueling work days. And mm-hmm. now it's just something way less fun.
I think too, it was probably like you miss how things were of like he was riding the big cats around. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you miss that ability to like be literally eye to eye with them and that you can't do it anymore. He would still go and like drive his little wheelchair around and be feeding them treats through their cages at the secret garden and everything. And like, you know, visiting with the ones at home. But I think that the cats really were a big part of it that he because he not just, oh, I get to go and see them and it makes me happy, but it's like, I want to get back to caring for them because mm-hmm. I like to care for them. And he has like the physicality to do it. But you're right. He was like used to that work, the work schedule. But for him, I think it's like, I want to be with my babies.
It's weird that, or is it weird that Manticore went to the secret garden? People could go visit him and see him because that seems like, maybe he goes and he lives at the Jungle Palace now.
Yeah. I mean, he said Roy's like, he's my baby. Like, he's sweet. Like, I guess he didn't want Manticore to be separated from his brothers and sisters, like he said, yeah. in the moments after the incident.
In September of 2004, NBC aired the special Siegfried and Roy, The Miracle, offering viewers a glimpse into Roy's rehabilitation process. The host, Maria Shriver, rolled a soccer ball to Roy, asking,
"Is it really that hard to do, Roy?"
Kicking it back with his once paralyzed left foot, the injured entertainer replied,
"It takes every inch of my being."
Roy also revealed that he was conscious during the incident with Manticore. As he was being dragged off stage, he thought to himself,
"Dear God, let this be a bad nightmare."
Siegfried opened up during the special, saying of his partner's recovery,
"If he's not going to be able to use his left arm, then I'm going to be his left arm. It breaks my heart sometimes, but most of the time it's heartwarming. It's bitter and it's sweet. Now I know life is a gift."
Made me cry.
Yeah, they tried to make it into a positive. I mean, yeah. It's really hard to find a positive in a situation like that, but what else can you do? And to know also that he was fully awake and conscious during that. I mean, I guess, yeah, because when they got the tiger off of him, he was also conscious and stuff. So you're just got a tiger latched onto you and you're being drug away, looking up at the lights on the ceiling like, this is it.
It's one of those moments in your life where you're like, this is not happening. I'm not on the stage. I'm in my bed. I'm going to wake up. And this was all just an anxiety nightmare of something. This is not the timeline I'm in. And it's like, when you hear the of the fire extinguisher, it absolutely is.
Yeah.
But you could see just between them, like there's footage in the special of like Roy doing his therapy while Siegfried's in the room. And like Roy like makes a step and Siegfried's like, "You're doing it, Roy. You're doing it." Like he's just cheering him on. And he's like, "Come on, come on. I know you can." And Roy's like, and like still had his humor about him. Like Maria Shriver essentially was like, "Oh, this is your job now." And he was like, "Yes, but the pay is lousy." Like, funny, you know, like being funny, like trying to keep it up. But you could tell it takes every inch of my being. It really, to see a man who went from like jumping and moving across the stage and to literally being like held up on either side by women that are like 30 years his junior. And he's just like, trying to just do one kick. And he was determined. He was like, I will walk again.
Yeah, no, he was so determined. And that grit is what got him to 5 months later. He's walking around. Most people, I don't think, would have been doing that.
Not at all.
The NBC special dovetailed with a new computer animated sitcom premiering on the same network. Produced by the creators of Shrek, Father of the Pride followed a family of white lions whose patriarch stars in Siegfried and Roy's Las Vegas show. The cast included John Goodman, Cheryl Hines, Carl Reiner, and John O'Hurley. It aired from the fall of 2004 until the spring of 2005 before being canceled due to declining ratings.
So, like, he's bitten by the tiger in October of 2003.
Yeah.
And then they're in development for this show already. And they're like, we'll keep doing
it. We're going to do it.
Meanwhile, like, if you watch the cartoon show, which I think the pilot's available, I don't know if, like, all the episodes are out, but you can watch the pilot on YouTube. Like, Siegfried and Roy are not injured. Like, Roy's fine in it, and there's been no biting. And also, the star of the show is the same breed of cat that bit his throat. So there's also an underlying, like, is he going to bite him? Like,
is it going to happen? Goodman's, are they going to do it? Surely they wouldn't, right?
John Goodman is the father of the pride. Like, hey, and you're like, I think the main character is going to kill him. He doesn't. But there's this underlying. So you can see why this show is never going to make it. Like, it sucks because I think if he was not grievously injured, I don't know that this was like a great show, but it would have been way different tonally.
Oh, yeah. I mean, good cast.
It's great. Peterman from Seinfeld? Are you kidding me?
Great. Carl Reiner. But to go from like the worst thing that could have happened on that stage, and then a year later we're like, here's the cartoon where we don't address it at all, is very odd.
It was odd. And it felt like the NBC's The Miracle is very pro Siegfried and Roy. And this episode was all the moment by moment was based on the actual, you could hear the 911 calls and stuff. But as far as like what Roy and Siegfried thinks happened, that's their version. And again, Maria Shriver, I think I'm not impugning her credibility as a journalist, but we should note And it was not noted in the episode, like, I know these people and we're buds.
Like, she's not going to grill us. She's not going to press us for things.
It was very, like, congenial and sweet and everything. And it is, like, one long, look at how great Siegfried and Roy are. Mm-hmm. Don't forget the show is premiering. And, like, they're both done by NBC. It's got a little bit of a, like, network. It was, like, a promotion for the cartoon. Yeah.
And a bit of a, you know, PR smoothing things over, for sure.
Yeah, like, tigers are not evil. Watch the cartoon. The Manticore was saving me. He's very sweet. And it's like you're trying to, like, reclaim the image of the white tiger as this, like, fun, family-friendly. And it's like, we all see him in a wheelchair. And, like, he's put there by a tiger that looks like John Goodman tiger.
Yeah.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
Throughout Roy's recovery, Siegfried remained a constant presence, providing unwavering support. Lynette Chapel, a longtime collaborator, told ABC News,
"Both Siegfried and Roy were wounded in this accident. It was very, very difficult for Siegfried. He lost part of his soul then, too."
Siegfried maintained a low public profile during this period and remained mostly focused on Roy's care and recovery. Despite the lasting impacts of his injuries, Roy's love for animals was seemingly untouched. He believed that his interactions with the animals were therapeutic, aiding both his emotional and physical rehabilitation. He even continued to visit Manticore weekly at the secret garden at the Mirage. He told NBC in 2004 that the now infamous tiger was the sweetest of the group and explained,
"I forgive him instantly. There's no bad feeling of any kind. He's my baby. He saved my life."
I think this is what I would also say about my kid if they did something heinous to me and I couldn't bring myself to really believe what really happened.
And it's just like, no, he would never. It was to help me. That's how much we love each other. Because if you admit that it wasn't, then you don't have control over all of these animals and you shouldn't be left alone with them, and they shouldn't be alone with anybody. That's, you know, they should be in a more appropriate place to be taken care of, away from, I don't know, the public and with no railings.
It is wild that this animal straight up attacked him and then was still on display at the hotel where the attack occurred. And I'm not saying that the manticore should have been put down, but normally when a wild animal attacks a human, that's what happens.
Or that they're rehomed somewhere else. Yeah, but yeah. I do think that you're right as far as similar to, there's not going to be a lawsuit for the tape from Roy because he wants the cat to be okay, that they're going to frame it as he has never attacked anybody, so he shouldn't be put down because he was actually a life-saving Lassie type tiger, which if we remember back from episode one, when Roy's like, "I was in the swamp and Hexa came and saved me. My dog came and went and got people and magically brought people back." There's no, like, witnesses to that. Like, to Roy, like, that just happened. And he tells everybody that Hexa was this genius dog and knew, half wolf, half dog. Hexa was a real dog. Yeah. Hexa was really his dog. There's photos of him with Hexa. Whether or not Hexa truly saved him from the reed swamp, we can't know that. But it's interesting that that's the narrative that he chose to run with the manticore incident, given that he had previously, and like I said, it wasn't that he later told the Hexa story after manticore ate him. He wrote the Hexa story in the 1992 book. So, like, a decade before this even happened, he's framing these wild animals, because it's not just a dog, by the way. It's a half wolf, half dog, that not only is he close with them, but he's so close with them that perhaps psychically linked with them that they are able to save him. So Hexa knew he was drowning and knew to go get farmers and knew to bring those farmers back. And manticore knew he was having a stroke. Manticore's a cardiologist and knows, like, we've got to relieve the pressure. Let me just use my teeth. I don't have opposable thumbs. So it's just interesting, these parallels. And to me, it does seem more like a person that's willing to say or do anything to keep what he perceives as his, like, furry family safe. Because as a kid, he found comfort in Hexa. His mom was gone. His stepdad literally tried to murder them. And he would cry himself to sleep on the breast of his dog. Like, these, they didn't have kids. They had these cats.
They were their children.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Taken care of better than a lot of children, human children are.
100%. I mean, they had to wait. I never had a pool as a kid.
But no, I didn't have a fucking secret garden and shit to run around in.
My own nutritionist.
I also didn't have giant fangs that if I got angry or anything could have, you know, ripped one of my parents' throats out.
Once did I bite my parents in the throat, and
I don't think
have.
I did either. No.
I could have.
Yeah, we all could have, but we didn't. With their stage show on indefinite hiatus and the footage buried, the truth of what happened between Roy and Manticore would remain a secret for over a decade until someone who was there finally decided to come forward. So what do we think?
Well, part four will discuss the whistleblower's version of events and how the story has sort of morphed over the years. But I think in your question of like, did they make it up purposefully? Did Roy make it up as a delusion? I'm really leaning mostly toward a self-preservation based shared delusion of like, they're going to take all the cats if we say he really hurt me. People might look disfavorably at white tigers because he hurt me and we want to preserve them and protect them. As much as I think they would like bullshit say like, this is for education and put the tiger in their show, I think that they also didn't want tigers to be hurt or harmed or killed.
Oh, no, I don't think so either.
But also white tigers like aren't out in, as we talked about last time, they're not their own breed. So like it's, but I think that they wanted
you're preserving
to preserve
something that you're breeding.
That you created, right?
Yeah.
But you're right. I think because given like when animals attack, oftentimes the solution is to take them somewhere, to either take them away and you don't get to have them at all, or take them away and destroy them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that he could have survived that. It's like, no, I saw it. I was like Siegfried being like, I saw everything that happened. I'm like, bitch, you were backseat. You ain't see shit unless you saw the tape, which we all would like to see the tape.
I bet they both saw the tape.
100%.
Like, yeah.
And the idea of like, if really Manticore saved you, you have footage of a magical cat that's a white tiger so intuitive that it knew you were having a stroke, which I don't think you were. You had a stroke on the table later. But let's just pretend what you said was true. Then show the footage. Like,
yeah,
then that's amazing. Like, this is like, that cat should be in a, you know, exalted. It should have
those
its own
like
enclosure.
The dogs that can predict when someone's going to have a seizure.
Yes,
let's train them. We can have tigers doing it now.
It is. It's like a fucking, like a help dog.
A
or
service
like
animal.
It's a service tiger. Like, you have a service tiger. But because they were like, oh, no one needs to see it. It's for our privacy. Don't worry. Also, we can tell you what happened. Just ask us. Mm-hmm. It's that same, their whole entire life was, we're not lovers. We're just magic partners. Like, but don't pay attention to that. I'm cutting him in half for real. And so their whole thing was illusion, shared, perhaps delusion that they were never going to say what really happened. And perhaps for his own survival. Again, like Roy said
it. Yeah, that's a good point.
For his own, but like, I don't know if he would have lived.
The stress of it.
Yeah, if he would have lived it, he knew Manticore was going to get.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to be said about that. I bet that even to each other, they never acknowledged that something other than the story they've said happened.
For sure. I'm sure as Siegfried, you wait till Roy can talk. And when he comes out, you're like, what happened, Roy? Like, what do you remember? And Roy's like, Manticore saved me. This stroke was because I had high blood pressure and I was on medicine, and that's what made me have a stroke. And then Manticore is the one that saved me. And it's almost like because they were together from when Roy was 13 and Siegfried was like, in his upper teens, I say together, you know, they knew each other and like, you know, were performing, traveling together. But there's probably an element of arrested development because you tend to sort of like remain in those behaviors. So it's like, he's created, both of them were horribly traumatized as children by having the alcoholic fathers who served, you know, in Hitler's army and like were, you know, one of them was a POW and they drank and they beat them and they didn't love them. And like when you have the capability to escape, which Siegfried escaped into illusions, Roy escaped into his, I'm the greatest animal trainer ever, that like there's some understanding of like that the illusion is safe. And so we should stay together in this illusion. And from Roy's perspective, he may, you know, insofar as like people that are delusional, like and purposefully lie or whatever, or he may have really believed it. But for Siegfried, it's like, if I tell him that Manticore tried to kill him, he'll die. Like, and I don't want him to die. I love him. And this lie kind of keeps him going and burn the footage.
Yeah.
Burn it.
Yeah. I don't even know if I think that Manticore's intention was to kill him.
Yeah.
I think something spooked him either the bop on the nose or whatever. He's just having a bad day. And he did knock him down by going for his arm, but I don't think he was trying to help him by dragging him off by the throat. It seemed to me more of like when an animal drags their kill back to like their lair, mm-hmm. you know, because he was taking him right back into his big old cage is where mm-hmm. he was headed with him. So
yeah.
I think if he'd wanted to like
shred him,
yeah, he could have easily yeah. done that. I also think he could have knocked him down and just walked off stage, the backstage, or fucking jumped down into the crowd, which, my God, can you imagine?
Mm-mm. No, that, and like I said,
it'd be a totally different series that we're doing. Holy shit.
As
the
many
day
as
the tiger, Manticore, attacked the Mirage.
I mean, the Manticore Mirage Massacre, certainly. Because, I mean, as many shows as they did, it's surprising it did not happen that way. But you're right. There is something to Siegfried saying, if Manticore wanted to kill him, it would have been over in 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. Like, he would have just crushed him and killed him. But there's almost like a dominance move. And I wonder when Roy bopped him and then sort of stumbled and Manticore got his arm, if it was like kind of a, I won't say they're like fighting, but almost like, I'm the boss. Like, you hit me mm-hmm. in my nose, I'll show you. Like, almost like when you fight and then you want to drag him off, you know, like, I'm in charge. Let's go. I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. But that's also humanizing an animal in a lot of ways with a lot of emotion when perhaps it was nothing more than like meat puppet, take bite, yeah. go off stage, you know, walk back, like go
yeah,
home.
Just instinct.
And it's mm-hmm. not, he's my baby and I love him. And we did, you know, I mean, I think there is something to animals having, obviously, souls, feelings, emotions. You can see that. You can see these tigers treat Roy differently. Like, he did have a connection with them, but it's just never as strong as you say it is. Like, it's impossible to be that strong.
And maybe it was strong enough to where he didn't shred him, you know? Yeah.
If it was someone else, maybe he would have killed him if they bopped
him. Yeah, but even that's the thing. With a 400-pound fucking tiger, even if it's not trying to kill you, there's a good chance it will on accident just by sheer force.
Mm-hmm, just by being its tigery self.
Yeah.
And also to say, like, well, tigers don't have, like, feelings that they get mad and they get sad and they get – yes, they do. And you can see sometimes they fight. Sometimes it's over mm-hmm. resources. Sometimes it's over hitting or whatever. It's like – that we have those same animal instincts. We just don't have the same fucking jaws as those things.
No, we don't. Or the teeth. Yeah. Well,
I'm stoked for us to get to the whistleblower's version of events and kind of how that impacts their legacy and where their legacy's going from here.
Yeah.
Part 4.
And just a reminder, if you were at the show,
please,
if you ever saw them, send it in to Freaky Friday, which this will come out after this Friday. So by the time this comes out, you will have heard of
an event
of one incident with a tiger at the Secret Garden.
If I have to choose the tiger doing me like Roy or doing me like our listener, I'm going to have to take the listener.
Oh,
I will say,
every time.
I will say, but
every time.
If I had to choose, I would choose none of the above if I could. So
yeah,
hope you all enjoyed that, that Freaky Friday.
Yes.
Thank you for sending that in.
Well, if you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather's Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed. And Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
We also offer free trials, so if you're not sure what any of those are, you can join for free for a week at one of our tiers. I would select the highest tier, honestly, because you get everything. Check out mm-hmm. all the perks. You cancel any time before the trial is over without getting charged. But if you stick around, do an annual membership, because you can get 1 month free when you sign up for a whole year. And when you do, what might you get on Patreon?
Ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As on the third Thursday of every month, and quarterly live bonus content, both of those on Crowdcast, weekly audio bonus content, mini-sodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole World Wide Web.
That's you guys. And don't forget, June 19th is the third Thursday. So that is 1, 2, 3. That will be our live Q&A. So that's tomorrow as you're listening to this. So catch us live.
And time is weird.
It's so crazy. head over to sinisterhood.com. Click shop on the top banner to check out Sinisterhood merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show, submit topics for cases you'd like us to cover, submit your odd but true tales for Freaky Friday, and whatever bizarre or hilarious video you want us to live react to during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. Don't worry, it's totally free. You just enter your email, you get access to the chat, everybody's pets, you get the unedited Sunday Scaries. Once it goes up on YouTube,
it's not on.
We got to edit stuff out. So if you want the unedited, you just got to go over to Patreon, put in your email, and just for signing up for free, you get other fun stuff. You get monthly audio bonus content sent to you, and there's a whole backlog of other free stuff that you can enjoy.
Hell yeah, and you just also get an alert whenever we upload new things.
You can also find fun things like topic-based playlists and, of course, tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2025.
We'll see you on the high seas. Go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister, and you can get that fan code. Follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on TikTok and YouTube at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you are looking for a unique and personal gift for the fan Sinisterhood fan in your life, or you just want to treat yourself to a pep talk or some advice, book a cameo now. From happy birthday to birth announcements to congratulations on whatever accomplishment, we will create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. Not only is it an incredibly thoughtful gift, but it's perfect for when you don't want to deal with the hassles of shopping, or you're looking for something last minute or something totally unique. You're like, they have everything. I can't think of anything. Every cameo is unique. So go to cameo.com/sinisterhood to book that. Where can people find you online?
I am on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts. Call Me TV.
Emma Olson.
Kate Spearman.
Nikki D.
Mary Yakima.
Mary Busher.
Victoria Hensley.
Emily Cazares.
And Sabrina Thomas.
Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you guys. We sincerely love and appreciate each and every one of you. We hope we pronounced your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.